Today we will be discussing the memorable knockout stages of the recent World Cup and also having a look forward at the upcoming Ashes series. So, to keep it in chronological order, we'll start with the music, which was an interesting one because it was one day international that played over 2 days. So in the fairly unique situation of actually having an overnight break during the match, at that point, with New Zealand's innings near its end and maybe looking a little under par, but no one really knew, who did you think was on top at that point?
Oh, I mean, I think it was pretty clear that India was on top at that time. And what happened was, it's just very hard to quantify. But, I mean, personally, I felt India were well ahead of the game at that point. And, you know, if the game had gone on that day, I think India would probably have won. I mean, that's just my feeling. I'm not saying it's any sort of undeniable conclusion or anything. But it's just funny, right, you know, how things happen. You know, it was almost like, New Zealand were meant to be in the finals, and you know, it rained, and then, you know, we came back the next day, we were able to start on time, and there was a bit of cloud cover, the ball was just nipping around a little bit, that helped them. But that's just how it goes, right? That's how the game goes. So, you know, luck stays with you some days, it deserts you some days, it's just part of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I mean, I agree with you that at the point where it was called off on the first day, I thought New Zealand were well behind. I didn't think they had enough. I mean, I didn't think it would be impossible for them to go on and win, but the momentum was certainly with India. And then,
yeah, and I think those afternoon conditions as well, right?
Yeah. And then, I mean, really, for the most part, the match was decided in the first few overs of India's innings.
I won't say that. I would honestly say the match was decided in the last 3 overs of India's innings. You know, I mean, they were what, 37 runs or 42 runs behind with 4 overs left to go, and I think one of them had to be bowled by their fifth bowler, New Zealand's fifth or sixth bowler, and so I think India were very much well in the game. I think it was just one bad decision by Jadeja to go after Bolt. And to be honest, I think these games were so close that you can really break it down to moments. But I think the moment that I thought New Zealand were going to win was just in that, I think it was 3 overs and 37 runs to win. And the first ball or the second ball that Trent bowled to MS Dhoni, I thought he split the field between deep square leg and deep mid wicket. And I think Guptill probably it was who made a really good stop. And I think, you know, he kept it down to 2. And you know, if that had been a boundary, I think the result would have been different. It's little moments of brilliance. I think that's what won New Zealand that game. I wouldn't say the game was over in 3 overs. I don't think that's fair to either team.
No, yeah, I've probably been a little unfair there because obviously the lower contributions from the lower order in the innings kept the match very excitingly alive. And I think you're right that, yeah, you do have those little moments where you think, oh, it's happening, or, oh, no, it's not happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that was just a microcosm of what happened, right? I just think New Zealand fielded better. And honestly, I think that won them the game. I mean, Jadeja on his own, I think he was easily the MVP of the match. And his innings was probably the best batting performance of that match. But, you know, that's how it goes.
Yeah,
sometimes the other team plays better.
Yeah, I mean, you can't fault him for his innings at all, can you? It was a fantastic performance.
And it's a little unfair, right? I mean, if Jadeja played a match-winning innings there and, you know, match-winning innings in the final, I know in cricket web it's kind of a cliche to say that, you know, only the knockout games of the World Cups matter as ODIs and nothing else does. So Jadeja was well on his way to be the greatest ODI batsman of all time, I think. halfway there, you know, if we are going to use those stupid, ways that we analyze the game in that forum, I think that's what we would have done.
Yeah, I mean, if you were looking to find sort of the absolute best knock in a semi-final or final, that would have had to have been up there. And I think it stands up, even though ultimately India didn't go on to win, it doesn't take anything away from the innings at all.
Right. And that's just, it just goes to show how small things should not matter in the long, bigger conversations, right? I don't think the batsmanship of that innings or any other innings in similar situations goes down just because of the result. So, you know, because they don't know they're going to lose when they're batting, do they? They're actually keeping the game in the hunt. We end up saying like, you know, dead rubber innings, or, you know, innings in a losing cause. These are just stupid ways. I mean, it shows the difference that, you know, we don't play the game, they do. And you know, I think it shows in the way that we analyze the game.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. So, yeah, with that semi-final out of the way, we moved on to the England-Australia match. Obviously, I wanted us to win. As a pessimistic Englishman, I wasn't expecting us to at this point. From a neutral point of view, who did you think was going to go through from that match?
I thought Australia were really good. But, you know, with both India and Australia, you kind of got the feeling that they were maybe peaking a little too early, you know. And sometimes you just thought, you know, there were weaknesses in both teams. See, the best thing about this World Cup was, I think, every team had pretty major weaknesses that, you know, on their day, the other team could exploit. I mean, that's why England lose to Pakistan and Sri Lanka, right? And that's how all these other results go down. But I definitely did not think it would be that much of an easy win for England as it turned out to be. I definitely expected a closer game, especially after the first semi-final was really close. But the interesting thing is, I know Pakistan fans kept saying this is similar to the 92 World Cup and, you know, all those parallels and stuff like that. But I think this was more similar to the 1999 World Cup, at least in terms of the knockout games, you know. Because I remember Australia and South Africa played out a tie, and then Australia went through as in Australia came through in a close semi-final. And the other team came through in a relatively easy semi-final. So that's what I was comparing it to at that time. I mean, at least before the finals.
Yeah, I mean, the contrast between the two semi-finals couldn't have been bigger, really, because we've already discussed an incredibly exciting close game in the first match, and then what turned out to be a very straightforward affair in the second. Again, the opening, I mean, I've come away from this tournament with the feeling that a lot of the games, I mean, by no means decided by the performance of the openers, but they probably had a bigger bearing on the overall sort of course of the match than in some of the other games we've seen outside of the World Cup.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, in a limited overs game, openers, the contributions are always key, right? I mean, once you have a good opening partnership, I mean, 75% of the time, you're always going to get a good total. So, I mean, I don't know if the statistics bear that out, but I think that is how, in my experience of just watching the game, I think that's how it goes. But I think Bairstow and Roy especially, right? I just think Johnny Bairstow has added a additional dimension to the team, you know. Alex Sales was good, but he was more hot or cold. But I think Bairstow, especially for the English conditions, has just added a lot in terms of just pure batsmanship, you know. He's just an amazing addition. And it's just wonderful that England found a way to get him into the ODI side at the right time. And, you know, he looks like he's peaking at the right time as well, you know, around the World Cup.
Yes, because if I remember correctly, he sort of previously been in and out of the side a bit, I think mostly batting in the middle order. And I think he got his chance when Jason Roy lost his form so badly back around the time of the Champions Trophy. And since then, Bairstow's been just such a consistent performer at the top of the order. I mean, some of his centuries have come as quick as some of Joss Butler's, which is quite an achievement. And this opening partnership we've got between Bairstow and Roy, it's as good an international pairing as I can think of for many countries for quite a long time, to be quite honest.
Yeah, I would put money that, you know, the top six that England have are as good as any top six at any point of time in ODI cricket. I think as a top six, you know, individually there may have been better batsmen, but as a collective, they're amazing. But the problem is those top six guys bat or most of their games is shaped up by the fact that you also have guys from 7 to 10 or sometimes even 11 who have first-class centuries and things like that, you know. That sort of depth allows some of these players to bat the way they do, and then, you know. So it's kind of a, you know, chicken and egg situation. You cannot find what is the reason for that. But you just got to admire the way they played, you know. They stayed true to their game plan, and even in a big game like a semi-final, the finals was a different beast. I know we'll come to that later, but you know, you got to give credit where it's due. I mean, the way they batted in a semi-final, the way they played in that semi-final was really amazing. I mean, it's very easy to get nervous, especially for a team like England, you know, with all the history and all the baggage. And, you know, it was really refreshing to see England play the brand of cricket that they've been playing. And to see them do that in the semi-final was really wonderful to see.
Yeah, because prior to the tournament, people had been questioning whether our sort of ultra-aggressive method was going to cost us by coming unstuck in the knockout match. And in this case, it certainly didn't. But
yeah, it almost did in the final. But yeah, this game was
I mean, we'll get to that. But yes, the final had me a bit worried for many reasons. But whilst we're praising the batting, I think it's also fair to give a mention to England's bowling, which was being, you know, not unfairly sort of touted as a weak link going into the tournament. But I mean, I think largely due to the inclusion of Jofra Archer it's still got its obvious flaws as a bowling attack, but it seems a lot more threatening, basically, than it did a few months ago.
Yeah, I mean, Jofra Archer is a better bowler than any of the other guys that would have played ahead of him. That just goes without saying. So, but to that extent, he definitely improved the bowling attack. And I think the unsung hero was Rashid. You know, you just think, I remember when Adil Rashid played in India in 2016 or 17, the Indians would just totally go after him all the time. You know, you always knew a short ball was around the corner when he was bowling, or, you know, some loopy deliveries were coming. But I think through this World Cup, I mean, obviously when a team wins, you can find the roles that everybody played in the side. But I think Liam Plunkett and Adil Rashid, I think they are the unsung heroes. Jofra Archer, Chris Wokes, and, you know, Ben Stokes, and I think it was Mark Wood. All these guys would get the headlines, you know. Sunil Gavaskar used to call some of our Indian middle order batsmen as the glamour boys. And, you know, the openers are the guys who do the hard work. So I would say it's a similar thing for the England bowlers. There are those four glamour boys who get a lot of headlines. But I think the real MVPs were Adil Rashid and Liam Plunkett. Because, you know, getting wickets in the middle overs is what makes you a champion ODI side. And I think this England side became that because of them.
Yeah, I think you're right. It does go under the radar. Interesting that you mentioned Rashid, because I think statistically he had a very average tournament on the whole. I mean, he had, I think for a large portion of it, a bit of a shoulder injury wouldn't have been helping him sort of spin the ball as much. But the key thing is that he put his best performance in that semi-final when it mattered, and at the point actually where Australia might be getting back into the game.
Yeah, and I think the confidence of Morgan to also be able to play only one spinner, right? I mean, it is the form of Rashid that allowed him to do that, right? Because if Rashid was hit out of the attack, you had Joe Root or somebody bowling, and that was not good. And I don't think Ben Stokes was always in a state to bowl all his overs as well. So it could have easily unraveled for England if Rashid was not holding up his side.
Yeah, and I suppose it's fair to say that even when he wasn't necessarily taking wickets all the time in the tournament, Rashid wasn't like continually serving up long hops and full tosses. He was just maybe a bit less penetrative than sometimes. And you also mentioned Liam Plunkett, who I think people are now beginning to appreciate and has been for a couple of years an absolute key player for us in those middle overs. They've shown the stats about how he's over the last 2 years the leading wicket taker between the 11th and 40th over. I mean, it's partially due with the amount of games England have played, but he's just another one who's really come on and made himself an incredibly valuable member of the side.
Yeah, and if you look at the Champions Trophy side that Pakistan had, the team that won the Champions Trophy, they had a very similar makeup. You know, I think they had Hasan Ali taking a lot of wickets in the middle overs as a seamer, and I think Sarfaraz Khan was really doing well as a spinner. And you can directly see the parallel between Liam Plunkett and Adil Rashid here. So I think at least in England, it shows that you need to have a wicket-taking seam bowler for the middle overs. I think that's what India lacked, actually.
Yeah, quite possibly, because you've got the likes of Jasprit Bumrah, who can absolutely do the business at the opening of an innings and at the death. But obviously with him only bowling then, yeah, perhaps for all the qualities the Indian bowling attack has, maybe they are still slightly missing a quick bowler who can do the business in the middle of an innings.
Yeah. I mean, it just shows that we cannot, assume ODI cricket to be played by a book, right? You don't think of fast bowler bowling in the middle overs, typically. But, you know, England and earlier Pakistan have shown that it is important. I mean, hopefully teams realize that moving forward as well.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely spot on. Just going back to another thing you said about the confidence Morgan had in Rashid, I think a big difference between England's performance at this World Cup and their somewhat less successful last World Cup was, I mean, obviously there's a bit of a sort of cause and effect, but at the last World Cup, there was quite a lot of chopping and changing the team, and moving players and changing their roles, bringing who haven't had much game time. And that was necessary at times because players weren't performing. But throughout this tournament, we've had a much more settled team. There was the period where Roy didn't play because of his injury, and we had James Vince, and Plunkett missed a few games too. But for the most part, we've gone in with the same side where available. And it's, apart from obviously Jofra Archer coming in just before the tournament, it's the same size we've had for the last few years. And I think that has played a huge part in England achieving what they did.
Yeah, and I think if you look at the games, you know, if you look at the players who delivered as well, it's the guys that they identified a long time ago. I mean, I remember Liam Plunkett, you know, there was this lovely article by Jared Kimber on Cricinfo, which talks about that ball that he bowled to Adam Gilchrist. I think it was 2008-09, I don't know. Just after the 2007 World Cup, maybe. But then I remember Liam Plunkett in 2014 when I think Virat Kohli got bowled, leaving a ball, and you know, during a test match. So it's very interesting that, you know, players who you think are over the hill or who may not have those glamorous qualities, but who are consistently doing a job for you. You know, those are the kind of players that England backed, and you know, see, they won a World Cup. So it just shows that. At the end of the day, you know, being able to play a certain role in the team, being good team players basically is somewhat, you know, more conducive to victory and success than, you know, individually being the best players you are. So one example I can think of is KL Rahul, you know, in the Indian setup. He has all the talent in the world. I think he's the most gifted batsman in the Indian side after Virat Kohli. I would say even ahead of Rohit Sharma in terms of playing both pace and spin and back foot and front foot, just considering it all around. But you can just see that he has difficulty trying to play a certain role for the team. You know, he wants to play in a certain way. The team needs him to play in a certain way. And you know, he has difficulty adjusting. And then you see players like Liam Plunkett, who probably play a different role playing for their county or their T20 sides, you know. But then when they come to the England setup, they know what their role is and they do that. And that, I think, honestly, I think that makes the difference. You know, the vision that the England team management had, especially Morgan and Trevor Bayliss, and the commitment they showed towards that, and the fact that all the players bought into that. I mean, this is probably the best 4-year plan that has given success in my time of watching cricket, you know.
Yeah, on the whole, it has been a remarkable transformation. And I think you're right that, yeah, players knowing their role has played a key part in that. And from a sort of team management point of view, it's been fortunate that players have come in and been good at that role, because if people were struggling, you would have to be shifting people around. But equally, they've earned that by showing faith in a lot of players. I already mentioned Rashid, but I think even at like the start of his career, Jason Roy didn't start coming in and making big innings sort of straight off the mark. He took quite a few games in international cricket to get going, but the selectors saw fit to stick with him, and now they're reaping the rewards.
Yeah, I remember looking at him. I just kept thinking, what does he even bring to the table? You know, with him both and Alex Hales, you know, I never understood. I mean, with somebody like Johnny Bairstow and Ben Stokes, you can see that obvious spark, right? They're just a little bit better than the regular players. You can easily see that immediately. You just have to see them once and you know there's something special about them. But, you know, fair play to the England selectors, coach, whoever saw that potential, right? I mean, it was not visible to me. You know, when I looked at it, and obviously they have done a better job, you know, in identifying that potential. That's amazing.
Yeah, and I think people often don't give sort of the selectors and team management the credit they deserve when they get things right. So I think we should take this opportunity to say well done.
Yeah, definitely. I think this is as much a victory of the England team management and you know, everybody behind the scenes as much as it is for the team. I mean, it is absolutely a kind of a combined vision that has come to fruition. So it's awesome. It's wonderful to see.
It's been lovely to follow. And anyway, now that we've had a bit of a chat about the semi-finals, moving on to the final itself, and what a game that was.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what a night that was. I think there was that. It was heartbreaking for me. I mean, I'm a big fan of Kane Williamson. I've always been from the day he made his debut. And, you know, selfishly, I just wanted to see him lift the trophy. If it was not going to be India, I wanted Kane to be the guy who held the trophy aloft, especially after what happened in 2015. And then having idiots like Brad Haddin talk the way they did. I mean, yeah. That guy deserves every bad thing that happens to him.
Yeah, I mean, New Zealand are an extremely likeable team with a lot of likeable and very talented players. So even, had England not been in that final, had it been anyone else, I'd have been supporting New Zealand. It was a
really heartbreaking day. That's what it
was.
I am a Roger Federer fan as well, so it was doubly heartbreaking. There was, I think, a time when New Zealand were almost winning the match here and Roger was serving for the championship with two championship points. And I thought I was about to have one of the greatest Sundays of my life as a sports fan. And then it all came crumbling down.
Yeah, no one really got the result they wanted from either competition in a way, did they? I mean, it was amazing that we had two such incredible sporting contests going on at the same time.
Yeah, we got it on the same streaming platform here in India on Hotstar, and I was basically just toggling between them. I couldn't get my laptop working at that time, so I was just toggling.
Oh no, what a choice.
Yeah, it was Sophie's choice. I just had no idea. I switch here and then I see that New Zealand are about to win, and then I think, okay, they will win it, and then they're not winning it, so I just move to Roger. Roger is about to lose, and we're about to win, and then he doesn't win. It was crazy. But, I mean, I would like to ask you about that final. So, what do you think actually should have happened with those overthrows? It was a very, very interesting call, right?
Yeah, and it's a situation I'd never come across before with the ball deflecting off a player like that. I mean, the comments made by Simon Taufel, I think, the day afterwards, and reading the rules, I mean, I think from a sort of legal point of view, makes it pretty clear that it should have been 5 runs and the umpires got it wrong there. I think the bit that I take away from that whole affair, which disappoints me, is not so much that the wrong decision was made. I mean, obviously, I've got a vested interest there, so, you know, full disclaimer. But the fact that the umpires apparently aren't allowed to refer that to be checked on a replay.
Which, yeah, that's stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, forget the replay. They can at least consult the third umpire or the match referee who can interpret the rules better, right? These guys are already on the field in the World Cup final. They're already under pressure with different decisions. You know, it's human, right? You may miss something. The rule book, these are all very fine points of the rule book. And, you know, maybe imagine if Simon Taufel was sitting there as a match official or as a helper to the umpires or whatever it is. And he knows that this is the wrong decision, but he cannot say that to the umpires. Our game is just stupid.
Yeah, it does surprise me that in, you know, the 21st century, the technology is absolutely there. And cricket being cricket still won't let you use it until it sort of, I won't say backfires necessarily, but sort of comes to the public view in almost the most controversial way possible.
Yeah, I mean, I can see the difficulties. To be honest with you, I'll first make my position clear. That could have happened off the first ball of England's innings, and we won't be talking about it this much. The exact same thing, the exact same match, the exact same margins. But if this overthrow happened off the first ball of the match, we won't be talking about it. It happened at the last over.
It's a fair point. The timing made it all the more dramatic and probably emotional. What do you think also about the rule used for the tiebreaker in the end, the boundary countback?
No, I mean, it's a stupid rule. But look, when New Zealand started batting, everybody knew they had to score 16 to win the game or win the cup. 15 was always going to make England the champions. They knew that. Both teams knew that. But that's as fair as it can get. I mean, see, the rule itself was stupid, but I don't think it was unfair to New Zealand at that point because they still had it in their own hands, right? They could have scored 16 runs in the... if Guptill had just run a little faster, I think he would have been there. I don't think he ran I just think he was really nervous, to be honest. That's what I thought. I mean, he was trying to play a little dab, a little nudge, and he was trying to pace it so that he can run two instead of actually going for it. I mean, that length ball, he could have gone for it. It could have gone somewhere. He may have been out caught, but, you know, he could have also chipped it better, and then he could have got two runs. So, to be honest, I just think the moment got to him, and that was the first ball he was facing on the super over. I don't think it was a great decision to have Guptill face that ball. If I was Nisham, I would have called him through, even if he was going to get run out. And to be honest, if I was in the New Zealand camp, there is no way Kane Williamson would not have batted first in that super over. So, you know, I don't think it is about the rules so much. I just think New Zealand lost the match, you know. It's as simple as that. They didn't lose the match, obviously, or the super over, but they knew what they had to do to win the cup. So, in that respect, I don't think it was unfair at all.
Oh, no, I certainly wouldn't say the rule was unfair. I think probably more just unsatisfying is the problem with it. I mean, if it was me, I would just have another super over, personally, because I don't think you're going to get too long a sequence of tied super overs.
I mean, you can think of most tiebreakers that would have been fairer than this. I mean, even if you told me that England were going to win because they won the previous match between these two sides, as simple as that, which is what happened in the 1999 World Cup in the semi-final, I think that would have been a more fair reason to give England the trophy, right? So, I mean, ultimately, I'm okay with England being the winners. I just don't think that is the rule that should be used to decide the tiebreaker.
Yeah, I do agree with you. And obviously, I'm also very okay with England being the winners.
Yeah, I mean, the stars just aligned. We can all probably agree that they were definitely lucky to win the final. But look, luck is as much a part of sport as anything else. So, you know, you cannot begrudge them whatever they got, especially somebody like Ben Stokes. I mean, what a tournament, what a player. I mean, I've been very impressed with him. I don't know if you were in Cricket Web during the time that England toured India when they got blanked. I think it was 4-0 or something. And, you know, during that series, I was extremely impressed with Ben Stokes. You know, he had not had his issues with the law at that time, but he used to come across as a very brash and arrogant kind of a player. And I didn't have much of an opinion about him at that point. But then seeing him during that series and also having a chance to interact with him during the game at Chennai, I think, you know, I've become a very big fan of the way he plays the game. And, you know, I was totally happy that, you know, he is able to move on from what happened in the T20 World Cup, World T20, and then, you know, become a World Cup hero. That's amazing.
Yeah, he's someone who, for me, has matured immensely as a player, because I think the Ben Stokes of 3 or 4 years ago just wouldn't be capable of playing the innings that he did in the final. Even though at that point he was still capable of brilliance and had played some very good innings, less so in one day internationals, admittedly. I think at that stage, he knew he was a very good aggressive batsman and that's his only approach. But since then, he's just added the ability to perform in any match situation and in sort of most conditions as well.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at his resume, he has some, I mean, outlandish feats. I mean, he has a double century in South Africa, I think, in a test match. He has all those brilliant catches and wonderful bowling spells that he has done over the years. He has a very patient 100, I think, against India in a pretty difficult track. Once, you know, in one, I think it was Ahmedabad, I want to say, but I'm not sure. And, you know, but then you look at his ODI exploits, it's just, it's amazing. And you could see that change in him. I mean, I remember just in the IPL days, you know, him playing for Rajasthan Royals. I remember one game against CSK when he was very much batting very slowly. And, you know, he was just looking to take the game deep. The required rate was 7, then it went to 8 or 9, and he was still taking it slow. And I think he got them very close to him in that match. I think he kind of opened up towards the end. He timed his onslaught really well. So you could see the signs. And, you know, I don't think his innings was not good enough to get them over the line. But, I mean, what a player and what a part he played in that super over as well.
Absolutely. He had a fantastic tournament on the whole. Looking forward now, with the World Cup behind us, we now have the Ashes on the way. again, as a neutral, I'd be interested to hear your views on who you think will emerge victorious from that series.
Oh, I mean, I don't know. I'm just waiting to see how the Aussie bowlers adjust to those conditions. See, talent-wise, I think Australia's bowling has enough to cause England trouble. And I remember India came very close to causing trouble for England in 4 out of the 5 test matches that we played last year. And our bowling attack is not as good as Australia's, especially the fast bowling. So I don't expect Nathan Lyon to play too much of a role, but I definitely expect how the Aussie fast bowlers bowl that will dictate. And especially if Pattinson is fit, you know, James Pattinson and how he is going. He has been playing a lot of county cricket is what I understand. And he's been in good form over there. So his form will be key, I think. And, you know, if he's available, you know, he adds an extra dimension to their side. I have always been a big fan of this guy, Manas Labuschagne. I don't know if you followed the podcast that we did with Marco earlier. I've always told that, you know, I just think he has a bit of X factor in him. I don't know if he's going to make it to the squad. But, you know, I'm really finding it difficult to call the series at this point. And I think that shows it will be a very good series to follow, right?
Yeah, it promises to be. And yeah, I'm with you. I don't know what will happen. I do think it will be a bowling-dominated series because, A, England tends to favour bowlers on the whole more than batsmen. Australia, even if they don't get their absolute first-choice pace attack on the field, they've still got a very formidable lineup. And mm-hmm. both sides have got a lot of very unproven batsmen in them. And with the conditions you'd sort of expect in England in sort of August, September time, mm-hmm. there could be some quite short games, to be honest.
Yeah, and fun games to watch as well. Those are usually, especially as a neutral, so you know where a 50 will make all the difference. I think those will be really fun to follow.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to the series, it must be said. Found out the news today that Jimmy Anderson is a doubt for the first Ashes test. He will be missing the Ireland test.
Yeah, that's the 4-day test, right, with Ireland?
Yeah, that's right. And if his injury is bad and he's, say, worst-case scenario, he's not available for the Ashes, I would, at that point, tip Australia as favourites.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I will agree with you, but this England side is riding high on momentum. So it could go one of two ways. It could go totally pear-shaped, like just after your 2005 Ashes win, that side went. But at least there are some players, I think, especially Ben Stokes and Josh Butler, they seem to have good heads on their shoulders. I know it's funny to say that about Ben Stokes, but whatever has happened has helped him mature, I think. I mean, right now, I would say he's probably got a better head on his shoulders than he has ever had before. And, you know, he's more balanced about things and his perspective on life and things like that. So I definitely expect, to be honest, I expect a kind of coming of age for both Josh Butler and Ben Stokes in this series. I mean, more than anything else, I think that's what I'm looking forward to do. They're two of my favorite players from England of all time, and I would really love to see how they go. And probably see how Jofra Archer does if he makes his debut as well.
Yeah, there seems to be a school of thought that Jofra Archer is guaranteed a place in the Ashes, which I don't think is unreasonable because he's performed very well in the ODIs. It's a question of who do you leave out in the way. I mean, if Anderson is injured, that makes the question easier. But if Anderson is fit, you've got him, Stuart Broad, you've got Chris Wokes, who's a proven performer in English conditions. Mark Wood, with less of a record behind him, but who did perform very well in his most recent test.
Mm-hmm.
Who would you?
But Mark Wood is injured, right? Right now, if I'm not wrong.
Oh, maybe he is. I've clearly forgotten that if he is. Thank you for reminding me.
So, I mean, I'm not really sure, but I think it's good to be discussing who can you leave out, you know, when everybody's doing well. I mean, that shows England are in a better space right now. I mean, it's not a question of who can you play. It's more of a question of who can you leave out when everybody's playing well. That's always good. I think more than anything else, what will matter is whoever is going to be England's spinner, because Australia will definitely target that person. So if, I don't know, is it going to be Jack Leach or somebody else?
I think in all probability, we will start the series with Moeen Ali as our one spinner, because since he had that terrible Ashes tour last time round, he came back in the side, and his performances since then have actually been very good on the whole with the ball. Plus, in theory, he offers a bit more with the bat. In recent times, not so much.
Yeah, but you can never discount Mad Ali. You know, he could just go bonkers for one session and win you the game. So, yeah, that's always there. Yeah, I mean, I think it will be an exciting series. I'm not too sure about Moeen Ali being somehow he keeps taking wickets against India, but I just don't think he is going to be that successful against Australia, especially with Steve Smith and David Warner back. They're pretty good players of spin. So, especially Steve, I mean, he's one of the best players of spin in the world. So, I do think it will be very... I just think it will be a fun series to follow, you know. It will be very interesting to see how Australia reshuffled their batting since these two guys are back. There were a couple of guys who did quite well during the home season, whom I think I would definitely be... I mean, I wouldn't be surprised because it seems more logical, but I would be very disappointed. Personally, I would be disappointed if Manoj Labuschagne doesn't get a chance. I just think he has the X factor about him. He's really good.
He's definitely proved his case in county cricket this season. He's made a lot of big scores. And unfortunately, I do have to be heading off about now.
Okay.
So we will have to draw things to a close.
Sure. Let's go ahead. Yeah.
Right. Thank you for joining us, and goodbye. Yeah.